I'm John Batts with my colleague, Professor Abadalis of the U.S. Army War College. Colombia and Panama, Panama and Colombia. Once upon a time, not that long ago, Teddy Roosevelt time, that was one country. Today it is not. Colombia is troubled. Panama is troubled. We begin in Bogota, however, because over these last days, the president, Gustavo Petro, has displayed disorder, firing his cabinet, making speeches, remarks, that turn back of the first aircraft to return refugees to his country was poorly thought through. And I mention this because Colombia is a longtime strength in the Latin America and attached deeply to Washington over many generations, with lots of administrations enjoying welcome in Bogota. Is that still the case, Professor? Is the U.S. welcome there?
Well, the Colombia-U.S. relation continues to be deep and positive in a number of different ways, although it's certainly been very strained. And to me, it's really a tragedy what has been happening in Colombia. As you pointed out, under the regime of Gustavo Petro, which has turned Colombia very strongly to the left, but also more than anything, has pursued a series of erratic policies. Again, you mentioned the spat over receiving deportees, but also Petro's talk has moved toward what he calls a total peace proposal, which really, by letting alone to a certain degree a number of the different criminal groups, helped to give them space and empower them by moving away from going after local growing of cocoa, helped expand that production. Indeed, cocoa production expanded 57% in Colombia last year. That really also fueled the corruption and has impacted many of its neighbors. Petro himself has been somewhat erratic in his leadership style. He has been politically paralyzed in terms of taking forward some of his major reforms in terms of pensions and other things. And as we saw, just recently, you have the attempt to appoint a very controversial head of his cabinet, Armando Benedetti, that led to the resignation of a number of folks in his cabinet. That coming on the heels of Petro making a very controversial statement that Colombia should legalize cocaine, because cocaine, in Petro's words, was no worse than whiskey. So really, the erratic behavior has led to a political paralysis and difficulties that has compounded growing corruption and problems with violence and narco trafficking. So it's really compounding problems for a country which is relatively well educated and had made significant progress, especially under previous conservative regimes such as Alvaro Uribe and even Duque in the 2000s and in the 2010s. And so it's fall from grace, given the very educated Colombians, is a bit of a shock, especially for a country that had really one of the closest security partnerships and other partnerships with the United States in the region.
Panama, President Mulino, lies and falsehood, I believe, was the allegation directed somewhere at the United States. After the visit of the Secretary of State, there looked to be an accommodation about the security of Panama and fees charged through the canal and the future of Panama. Is there more to the disorder than there was last week, Professor? Is Panama slipping into a troubled country?
Well, actually, by contrast to Colombia under José Raúl Mulino, Panama continues to be fairly well governed. There was a significant apparent misunderstanding or miscommunication with respect to some of Panama's agreements following the visit of Secretary of State Rubio, in which the U.S. State Department had officially announced that U.S. government ships, so specifically military ships, would be allowed to transit the canal without paying the usual charge. That actually surprised a number of us when that announcement was made, because per the treaty, Panama has to charge all ships going through equal rates. You can't exempt any ships, although there is one special treaty in which actually Colombian ships going back for years, Colombian warships go through for free. But so the initial announcement from our State Department raised a lot of eyebrows. And then, of course, later, José Raúl Mulino, the president, said, no, that was not what I said, that is not the case. And so that led to a bit of a kerfluffle. But it's a kerfluffle in the context of, I think, a larger demonstrated attempt by Panama to accommodate U.S. concerns about the canal. Panama had announced the withdrawal from China's Belt and Road Agreement as a symbolic gesture. It had begun an audit of the Panama ports, Hutchison's operations in the ports of Cristobal and Balboa, which could ultimately at least take the Chinese out of two significant port operations there. Panama was working with the United States to address some of its broader concerns. Panama has been collaborating very closely and continues to collaborate on refugees coming through the Darien Gap. And so it appears that it continues to be good relation. My understanding is the visit with Secretary Rubio, with President Molino, had gone fairly well. This dramatic miscommunication or misstatement kind of put a kink in what was otherwise a positive visit moving forward with what should continue to be a positive relationship.
What is it that the U.S. needs to happen in Panama that is not now in place? Is there one item or two items, any other concerns that can be raised going forward? Because I don't expect this matter to be quiet.
Well, for President Trump, certainly there have been two significant areas of emphasis. Number one has been the presence of China, largely Chinese companies in the canal zone. And the issue there principally is that if the U.S. ever had to fight a war against the PRC or other type of war in the Indo-Pacific, the ability to keep the canal open, not only to the smaller class of U.S. warships that would pass from the Atlantic to the Pacific, but also U.S. military supply ships, the ships that are moving U.S. ammunition, U.S. Armored units, to be able to support those war efforts, that would be very, very important. And thus, the Chinese presence, it's not that China could shut down the canal because of it having two of the five port operations there in the canal zone. It's that overall the Chinese presence gives us essentially physical access, technical knowledge, and influence that would allow Chinese operatives to essentially do things. It's not unlike trying to defend against terrorism. When you have the access and the knowledge and the influence, it gives you options that it's difficult to go against. And so the one issue is the continuing presence of China in the canal zone. The other issue is the fact that it's gotten really expensive for all ships to go through the Panama Canal. And so for the U.S., especially, for example, sending U.S. LNG tankers, which I think right now is something like $525,000 a ship transit. So to the extent to which it's important for the U.S. to use the canal for example, its LNG exports to Asia, that is a big hit. And for President Trump, the fact that U.S. ships have to pay for something when we built the canal has long been, I think, an issue for him. So those have been the two big issues. And obviously, as you alluded to, another issue where we actually have a pretty good cooperation is the control of the transits through the Darien Gap, which has dropped to record low levels. But a lot of the people that go through the Darien Gap ultimately come and wind up on the U.S. border. And so that continuing cooperation over the Darien Gap, especially between the U.S. and the center front, the border service, is also vitally important for President Trump's management of the border issues.
Professor Evan Ellis, I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.